Welcome to the Boys Turner podcast. I am Rowan Torrell and I'm the Head of Dispute Resolution at Boys Turner. This special edition of our podcast comes from the Caledonian Club in London, where we've been holding an event called Building Growth and Efficiency for In-House Legal Teams. This episode is going to give you a taste of one of the three panel sessions that took place today, which was called Growing and Retaining Talent from Pre-Qualification Upwards. I hosted this panel session and it featured Holly Moore from ITV, Lucy Allen, the Managing Director of Barbary, Mark Levine, the Managing Director of BCL Legal Recruitment, and Dilsha Caldera, the Deputy General Counsel of the UK Civil Aviation Authority. Here are a few highlights of our session. Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much to all of you for coming. I know how busy your days are, so I'm really grateful to you all for giving up a whole day to come and spend with us at our conference. So, as I said, our first panel today is looking at recruitment and retention, and I have a panel that will be able to hopefully take us through from pre-qualification to building at the top end of your team. And that hopefully brings us nice on to Lucy, who can explain a bit more about what the SQE is and how this has affected routes to qualification.
Yes, so perhaps a show of hands from the audience. Does everybody know what the SQE is? Oh, good. That's actually quite rare. So just to kind of, go over it quickly, the SQE is the Solicitor's Qualifying Exam. It is the new route to qualification that is in a transition process superseding the LPC, so the traditional route to qualification. It's opened up opportunity across the legal ecosystem, really, for people thinking about taking a career in law, but also for employers. The traditional training contract has disappeared. I say that slightly loosely because some law firms will still want to pursue their traditional training contract. However, what that's been replaced with is a period of qualified work experience. And that work experience over a two-year period can be taken at up to four different placements, either in private practice, in-house, working pro bono, working for a law clinic, across a huge range of different experiences. So that in itself means that people can start to think differently, employers can start to think differently. I think for the in-house community, it has opened up a wealth of opportunity to think about workforce strategy, how you might upskill talent, how you might attract talent and develop that as well. I think one really good thing that this has been able to amplify is the apprenticeship route as well, which is something that in-house teams probably more widely across their business are actually deploying in finance or project management or other areas. And now it can really be used in law as well.
Thank you. Now, Holly, for you, what was the advantage for you of being able to go through that apprenticeship and SQE route into an in-house role?
So overall, the benefit of taking this apprenticeship route was, for me, when I was 18, I didn't come from that background that I had an easy, straight route into law. I wanted to go to university, I wanted to study law, I wanted to become a solicitor. My mum ended up saying, I don't think that's the best route for you. I was first generation university student, first generation professional, so I didn't have that sort of knowledge and support behind me to really feel comfortable taking that leap into the legal world. And the apprenticeship route for me took away all of those worries. It was funded, I would earn a salary, I would get the experience I needed, and if I did my bit and worked hard, then I would get all of the qualifications necessary to qualify. So from that perspective, it took away all of my worries. And then came the issue of choosing between private practice and in-house. And at 18, when I was at college, I had no idea what private practice or in-house was. I just thought, you're a lawyer. You do law. And quickly came to realise that actually private practice and in-house are very, very different. Very different places to train, very different places to work. And after looking into both and having the sort of privilege of receiving offers from both, I felt that the in-house route for me was really suited to my working style, my personality, and what I really wanted to get out of the apprenticeship. And it would give me that variety of work, it would give me that support, and being around people from very different backgrounds, very diverse backgrounds, and adding to that diversity of thought and actually contributing to the business. And I felt that that would really benefit me, and it turned out it was the right decision 7 years later. So that was the benefit for me, was actually the variety of work that I could get involved in and actually being thrown in the deep end and not having to, you know, really, really think about, oh, should I send this email? Should I say this? no, I could say whatever I wanted, I could do whatever I wanted and be sort of who I was and be comfortable with that. And within a year, I was I felt really comfortable with the work that I was doing and the variety of work that I was getting and the training and support as well.
Now, my next question is going to sort of blend both Dilsham and Mark together, which is the biggest challenge for your team in terms of recruitment retention for you, Dilsha, and then on to Mark as to what you're seeing in the marketplace as being the biggest challenges for recruitment and retention.
So our challenge has really been, on a limited budget, how can we attract good talent? So attracting a good pool of candidates. And we have run some recruitment exercises that have been just unsuccessful. And we've had to go out again, which is really not the position you want to be in. It's a lot of time and money, as you know. We've also been trying to improve our diversity. And that's been challenging. And we've tried different things. And we've taken advice and we've had tried different approaches. For example, we've had more junior lawyers look at our job ads and say, you know, is this something you'd want to apply for? And they've done a lot of really good work on saying, well, you know, if you like rephrase it like that, or what does that even mean? And it's really good to, you know, tap into the talent that is in your team already when you're trying to do that. And another challenge we've had is because of limited budget going out to advertise for fixed-term contracts, and that's really been not very successful, as you can imagine, especially in these times. Applicants want a bit more stability and certainty, so that has been challenging. But through all of that, I would say what has helped is know your USP and have that as a thread that runs through your recruitment. So for my organisation, the two key things we offer is working for the public good as a regulator and also the variety of work that we can offer. So we really play those hot buttons to attract the talent.
Thanks. You sound like an amazing client to work with and for. I mean, I think what I'll start with is that in our recent sort of salary survey, which we look at wider questions of the in-house marketplace, a massive 91% of respondents were satisfied or more than satisfied as they're in their current job. So really, there's like 9% of the in-house community that are in some way, you know, dissatisfied. And why I think that's such an important part to start with is that when we talk to clients, they sort of say, oh, we're X brand, you know, people will want to come and work with us. And it's like, well, they're probably already working, you know, in a large organization. So it's then defining, well, what is it that specific role and opportunity is going to give, you know, the next person. So when we're speaking to people, again, when they're not unhappy, it's trying to find, do they want more management? Do they want more homeworking? Do they want, you know, just something, you know, diverse? So starting from that point and then recognizing that budget is a huge issue right now. Obviously, the closer that you get to London and the high salaries that law firms are now offering. And actually, the question that somebody else asked me before, sometimes we're seeing more flexibility within the law firms than in-house organisations because, you know, working as part of a team, not just lawyers, accountants, marketing, HR, they want you to be in the office. And I guess a lot of people have decided that as much as they want to focus on their career, you know, taking the dog for a walk at 1 o'clock in the afternoon is also just as important. So we've seen a huge challenge over the last couple of years. And then the final bit is I just don't think there's enough lawyers in the marketplace. So, and that goes back to, you know, the financial crash where law firms don't always recruit and train the individuals that they do or don't need at a certain time. And then that flows on through.
With me now is Holly Moore.
Hi, Holly.
Hi.
Now, one of the things that we talked about on the panel earlier today was your journey through an apprenticeship route to qualification. What would be the top tips that you would give to an employer who is looking to support somebody through either an apprenticeship or just doing an SQE qualification at the same time as they are working?
I think that is the key. It's support. So offering that support through managerial support and extra time given to catch up with the apprentice or SQE candidate, making sure that they're developing, making sure that they have enough balance between work and study, and making sure that they're not overwhelmed going through it, because the SQE, especially that final 2 years of the apprenticeship or that SQE period, can be really intense and really stressful. So making sure from a wellbeing perspective that they're looked after, as well as trying to actually make their work relevant to their studies, which really helps both parties. So, for example, if they're doing property contract law, look into if you've got property or contract work that they can be doing so that they can really make that work as practical as possible and put them in a position for success.
How important do you think it is for somebody who's training in an in-house role to go out into private practice for at least part of that training period and vice versa?
That's something I always advocate for, really. I think I went on one secondment for 6 months and integrated into a trainee pool during that time, and I found the experience really educational and found it important actually for my development to experience both sides and to experience both in-house and private practice, not only for my own career decisions but actually for my working development and knowledge. So working for other clients, for example, working in other industries and working with different people and managing that, as well as studying still at the same time. So I think it's really, really important, and I think it should be advocated for at some point during both private practice training contracts and in-house apprenticeships training contracts or general training in-house. I think it's always a benefit, and an added benefit would be a trainee swap as well. Yeah. So actually having that role sort of backfilled so that no one's missing out on any work, and it's a really great experience for both.
Thanks very much for your time today, Holly. It's been great.
Thank you for having me.
With me now is Lucy Allen. Hello, Lucy.
Hello.
So one of the things that we talked about with Holly was her apprenticeship route. She went through the 6-year apprenticeship route, so she came straight out of school. Are there other ways in which you can go through an apprenticeship route?
Yes, there are. There's now the emerging graduate apprenticeship route as well, which is over a shorter period of time, 2 or 3 years, again, depending on the provider. But the assumption is at that point that you have either already got a degree through other means or an equivalent of degree, i.e. already come through another apprenticeship channel. So really that apprenticeship is much more focused on the SQE experience as the endpoint assessment.
And so you'd still do an SQE 1 and an SQE 2 within that?
Yeah, you absolutely do both. And you still earn while you learn, and you still get the benefits as you would otherwise as an employer and the student through the process.
Apprenticeship levy and all absolutely. Those sorts of things still apply as well. Fantastic. And one of the things I think people are still struggling to understand a little bit is everybody knew how the LPC worked and what happened. You went away for a year in most cases. Sometimes you do it 2 years part-time. There were various providers, but obviously it's now opened up much more. There are lots of different providers and lots of different ways to learn. Can you tell us something about a little bit more about the preparation for the SQE and what the different available options are to prepare somebody for the exam? Because the two now aren't intrinsically linked in the same way they were. LPC, you had your exam with the same person that you obviously studied with. Now SQE is central rather than through the provider.
Yes, and I think you're right. There is still so much confusion because there's so much choice. So actually, you don't have to choose a provider at all. You could be very confident that you would be able to pass without preparing, or you could be very price conscious to the point where you just couldn't possibly afford it and you might want to put yourself forward. So there is no mandating of choosing a course provider, but the various course providers out there will give you different flavours of experience. So that can be in person in a classroom, or it can be online. But I think one of the benefits of the SQE is the emergence of online provision, because that enables you to be really led by the technology. You know, there's certainly some emergence of kind of AI in that process as well, and personalised learning journeys. But it also gives you the flexibility to be able to fit that in around other commitments and priorities as well. The SQE 1 is a multiple choice exam, so slightly modelled on the US bar exam. And I would suggest that you absolutely need to prepare for that, because it is a very, very, very different style of assessment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time, Lucy. It's been great speaking to you.
Thank you, Rowan.
You can follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you want any more information about us, go to boysturner.com.